Coverage from the Cattle Industry Convention 2019 continues from New Orleans, powered by Corteva AgriScience, your partner in range and pasture productivity. We talked to a lot of folks over the several days in New Orleans and the Cattle Industry Convention. One of them we had the opportunity to catch up with was one of the lobbyists for NCBA in our nation's capital, Danielle Beck. Danielle, I know you cover several different things, maybe top of mind, and once again called a priority issue in 2019 will be fake meat. I know there's a lot of other folks call it different things, but the cattle industry and really most of the animal agriculture has called it fake meat since the get-go. Where are we in this whole process?
Well, quite a lot has happened since last year's convention when we first passed policy on this issue. Most recently, USDA and FDA announced that they have agreed to jointly oversee the regulation of these products. FDA will oversee the, you know, cell collection, the cell harvesting, the cell banks. USDA will oversee the day-to-day production and the labeling. You know, the day-to-day production and the labeling, I think, are the two most important aspects. We believe that sort of gives USDA primary jurisdiction, and we're really thrilled to see that. But right now, both agencies need to continue talking. They need to figure out all the details for this memorandum of understanding that will, you know, really govern the terms of their joint agreement.
I know there's a wide variety of opinions on how close we are to really seeing it become commercially available. Where are we from what you hear?
You know, every company is different. There are companies that I think are at least 5 to 10 years away. There are others here in the United States that say that they're ready, you know, for market entry as early as 2019, you know, maybe even today. The one thing that's really going to determine when they enter the market is this regulatory framework. And until that's finalized, we're not going to see these products in shelves and grocery stores here in the United States.
Like a lot of things, partial government shutdown sure had impact on all of this. But what is the time frame from what you're understanding with first FDA and then USDA?
Yeah. So there was an open comment period following their public meeting that both agencies held in October. That comment period closed at the end of December, just a day after Christmas. Obviously, that was right in the middle of a shutdown. You know, now that the government has funding, both agencies are going to need to go through these comments really with a fine-tooth comb, you know, figure out what sort of questions they need to answer, you know, all of the unknowns, and then determine whether or not they want to issue guidance under the existing regulations or issue new proposed regulations. If they go the guidance route, that's a much quicker process. If they do proposed regulations, we could be looking at a formal, quite lengthy rulemaking process.
So that would be not just months, maybe years.
It could be. You know, it really depends. The devil's in the details.
So that's, you know, at the end of the day, what does this mean to cattle producers as far as this whole fake meat conversation?
You know, NCBA has really been instrumental. We've been driving the charge since day one, and it's really cool because ultimately, you know, we're always going to be glad to compete for the center of the plate. But this issue is about fairness. You know, as new products come to the market, if they're going to be targeting, you know, our consumer segment, our market share, you know, they're meat-like products that are perishable. They want to mimic our characteristics. They need to play by the same set of standards and rules. And that's not just about labeling. It's also about safety. And so being able to drive this conversation from the first day is it's a really neat experience. And I think beef producers should be proud of the organization they belong to for that. But, you know, moving forward, there's a lot of work to be done. There will be new products that always come to the plate. And beef producers have a great story to tell. We know that beef is what's for dinner because we produce the safest, most affordable, nutritious protein out there.
Let's switch gears, talk dietary guidelines. We've fought this battle back, I guess, with 2015 in that time period, and here we are, we're ready to do another round, but under a different administration, so maybe a little more kinder treatment for the beef industry.
Yeah. You know, I think that this administration they're fair. What's most important, though, it's not about kind treatment. It's about science, and it's about allowing science to drive this conversation. You know, we want the dietary guidelines to be based on sound scientific evidence, nutritional science, and not societal issues like sustainability or animal welfare, for that matter. And really, as long as science continues to drive that process, we'll be okay because we know that beef plays an important role in a heart-healthy diet.
I know we're early in the process, but we are starting the process, right?
Yes. So last spring, for the very first time ever, USDA put out a call on certain questions and topics for consideration. We submitted comments as part of that process. Those are going to be the topics of focus for the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee. They also put out a call for nominations. We submitted a packet of qualified individuals we would love to see serve on that committee. It was my understanding that that list was supposed to be finalized just prior to the first of the year, but due to the shutdown, I think that process has stopped up a little bit. You know, we're hopeful that, you know, just in the next couple of months, we'll see that advisory committee list finalized. And then, you know, it's an 18-month process from there until the 2020 guidelines are set.
And, of course, the folks on the guidelines committee, that's very, very important.
It is, because ultimately, you know, if there are activists driving a plant-based vegan agenda, it has the potential to dominate the conversation. And so we want it to be fair. We want it to be balanced. We want the process to be transparent and, again, based on science.
Right. One other area I know that you work on, tax issues, I guess because of the divided Congress, we may not see much in the way of fresh ideas out there.
You know, that's true. I'm not even sure that we were looking for fresh ideas. The biggest important thing moving forward was finding permanency for some of these provisions that are set to expire under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. You know, TCJA was, you know, the first time we fundamentally reformed the tax code in 30 years. It provided significant relief for farmers and ranchers, specifically on issues like the death tax. But those provisions expire, and ultimately we need permanency. So moving forward, you know, we want to work with our friends in Congress and on Capitol Hill to see if we can get something done in that regard. I'm not sure that permanency in terms of death tax relief is going to be on the new Democratic Congress's agenda. But, you know, we're going to make the rounds, have the conversations, because ultimately this is still a very important issue for our members.
And I guess what we got till the, 2025 or somewhere around there?
Yeah, 2026.
Okay. So we've got a few years to work, but that'll slip up on us pretty quickly, I would think.
Yeah. Beyond that, you can't really predict when you're going to die. And when you make an investment in an estate plan, that's, it's not cheap. That's an expensive investment, and one that you don't want to have to continue doing and rearranging and messing with every few years. We need that permanency because, you know, I think sometimes people forget that farmers and ranchers at the end of the day are also small business owners.
Thanks, Danielle. Danielle Beck from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's D.C. office. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.